The Looking Glass by Edith Wharton, adapted by Neville Teller.
I don't find it easy to make my way to church these days, Father. Oh, it's becoming a bit of a struggle.
All the more credit to you, Mrs. Attlee. You're one of my regulars. I depend on you.
That's kind of you to say so, Father. It's rheumatism, you see.
But I'd say you are quite mobile.
No, no, not my legs. My hands. Just look at my hands. All those years of massaging the rich and famous. If it weren't for the tablets, I'd be in constant pain.
My dear Mrs. Attlee, I'm so sorry.
Father Divot, tell me now, am I a good Catholic?
I would say so.
Would you? Would you really?
I would.
I hope so. And I'd like to be at peace with heaven if ever I was took suddenly.
And why should you not be?
But you see, Moira, there was no point telling Father Divot about it, because I've never repented.
Repented? About what, Gran?
No, I've got to risk my punishment.
But what have you done, Gran?
I did a great wrong to Mrs. Clingsland.
Mrs. Clingsland? I can scarcely believe it. Mrs. Clingsland, of all people, you did her a wrong. Mrs. Clingsland was your favorite client. So wealthy, so generous. I remember you talking about Mrs. Clingsland when I was a tiny tot, and yes, what about that big doll you gave me on one of my birthdays? Was I 5, 6? And telling me it came from Mrs. Clingsland with her love. How on earth could you have ever wronged her?
Generous. Yes, indeed. That she was.
And wasn't it through her help that you were able to buy this house?
It was, Moira, and more than that. It was only because of her that I lasted through the worst of the Great Depression. What saw me through were the careful, safe investments that she passed on to me from her great banker friend.
Well, thank goodness things are looking better now.
Oh, that's all due to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Did you know that Mrs. Clingsland was a great friend of our president?
I did not, Gran. Did you ever meet him? You were always going out to the houses of the grandest people.
No, no, I never met the Roosevelts. But Mrs. Clingsland had so many friends and they were all high up people. Many's the time she'd say to me, Cora, think of the loveliness of her calling me Cora. Cora, I'm going to buy some Golden Flyer shares on Mr. Stoner's advice. Mr. Stoner of the National Bank, you know. He's getting me in on the ground floor, as they say. And if you want to step in with me, why, come along. There's nothing too good for you, in my opinion. And as it happens, Moira, those shares kept their heads above water all through the bad years. And now I think they'll see me through and be there when I'm gone to help out you children.
Gran? That's all well and good, but you're wandering off the track. You said the great wrong I did to Mrs. Clingsland. I simply cannot believe that you could ever have injured your great benefactor and protector. How can you say you did a harm to a friend like Mrs. Clingsland?
Harm? Oh no, I don't say that. I never harmed her. I could never have done that. But I did her a great wrong. I wronged her when all I wanted to do was to help.
All right, then. You did her a wrong. Tell me, Gran. Tell me about it.
What would you have done, I wonder, if you'd come in on her that morning and seen her laying in her lovely great bed with the lace a yard deep on the sheets and her face buried in the pillows? Would you have opened up your bag same as usual and got out your coconut cream and talcum powder and the nail polishers and all the rest of it and waited there like a statue till she turned over to you? Or would you have gone up to her and turned her softly around like you would a baby? There, there, my dear. What's the trouble, huh? You can tell Cora Attlee. Tell me what it's all about and I'll help you.
Help me? Nothing can help me. Now I've lost it.
What have you lost? Come on, you can tell, Cora.
My beauty, Cora. My beauty. This morning, just before you arrived, it suddenly came to me. My beauty. It's gone. It's been slipping away day by day, and now there's nothing I can do about it.
Your beauty? Is that all? And there was me, thinking it was your husband, or your son, or your fortune, even. If it's only your beauty, can't I give it back to you with these hands of mine? But what nonsense all this is, with that seraph's face looking up at me, tear-stained though it is. Now, what brought this on?
The looking glass. This morning, for the very first time, I saw these wrinkles round my eyes. Do you see? There and there. Wrinkles. Tiny lines. I've never seen them before.
One late night. I'll have those disappear within minutes. You just see. Let me get at them.
Well, was it true?
That she'd lost her beauty. No, no, things like that don't happen in an instant. But youth and beauty are living things, Moira. Like flowers, they bud, then they blossom, then they fade. Yours too, Macushla, remember that. Oh, we can hold back the passage of time, but only briefly. What my dear Mrs. Clingsland had glimpsed was the first signs of the inevitable process. Poor lady.
So what did she do, Gran?
Well, we started a new routine. Every morning she'd demand her looking glass and then make me tell her that it wasn't true. And every morning she believed me a little less. She'd ask her husband, poor man, and him, never noticing any difference in her looks since the day he'd led her home as his bride, 20 years before, maybe.
Life must have become very difficult.
It did, because nothing that he or anyone else could have said would have made any difference. From the day she saw those first little lines around her eye, she thought of herself as an old woman.
Did the thought never leave her?
Not for more than a few minutes at a time. Oh, when she was dressed up and laughing and receiving company, then the faith in her beauty would come back to her and go to her head like champagne. But it wore off more quickly than champagne ever did. I've seen her run upstairs like a giddy young girl and then toss off her finery and sit in a heap in front of one of her big looking glasses. It was looking glasses everywhere in her rooms. She'd look and look and the tears would run down over the powder.
Oh, well, I suppose it's always hateful growing old.
Ah, now, Macushla, how can I say that when my own old age has been so peaceful and only because of all her goodness to me?
And yet you tell me you acted wrong to her. How am I to know what you mean? What do you mean, Gran? What terrible wrong did you do to Mrs. Clingsland? Tell me.
You know, Moira, my love, that I've always had a touch of the second sight. It runs in the family. I believe you have it too.
I certainly sometimes have feelings about people and places. I sometimes seem to know that trouble is looking for someone. I walk into a place for the first time and I can know it was the scene of some awful tragedy.
It's a gift, Macushla, passed on from generation to generation of Irish folk going back to the mists of time.
A gift? Yes, sometimes, and sometimes a curse.
You're right, my darling. Well, you know what happened in the Great War. I mean, the way women of all classes took to running to the mediums and the clairvoyants.
Oh, you mean those long lists each day in the papers of the young men killed, day after day. It was awful.
It was. And the wives and mothers had to have news of their menfolk. They were made to pay high enough for it. And the price wasn't only money either. There was a fair lot of swindlers and blackmailers in the business. Oh, the stories I used to hear. I'd have sooner trusted a bedraggled hustler at a fair. But the women just had to go to them. Well, when I was going from one grand house after another to give my massage and face treatment, I got more and more sorry for the poor wretches. Those soothsaying swindlers were dragging the money out of them, all for a pack of lies. One day I couldn't stand it any longer. I knew I had to help some of them. But I also knew that the church did not look kindly on such things. So I went to Father Divot.
The poor creatures. Your heart goes out to them, does it not? When we lose a loved one, The powerful bond of love remains, and many folk, perhaps most, seek some sort of continued connection. You can't but feel for these grieving people looking for assurances from their dead loved ones. But what are they really getting when they seek the services of a medium? The church teaches us to reject all forms of divination. Conjuring up the dead, consulting horoscopes, clairvoyance. All such practices conceal an unhealthy desire for power. They contradict the honor, respect, and love that we owe to God alone.
But what Father Devitt said didn't touch me. Yes, I was with him in rejecting all this fake clairvoyance, but what he never mentioned was what those of us gifted with a second sight might do to help those poor, distracted women. So one day, when I saw a lady half out of her mind because for ages she'd had no news of her boy at the front, I said to her, "If you'll come over to my place tomorrow, I might have a word for you."
But wasn't that rather dangerous? Suppose you'd not been able to tell her.
I know, but the wonder of it was that I really did have something to tell her. For that night, I dreamt that a message came saying there was good news for her. So next morning, I told her that good news was on the way. The very next day, sure enough, she had a cable telling her that her son had escaped from a German camp and had found his way back to the Allied lines.
Good heavens, Gran. I don't suppose she kept quiet about that.
She did not, and you can guess the result. The lady started coming in flocks and flocks. You're too young to remember, child. For the same thing once happened to your mother back in Connemara, until the priest got to hear of it, then it had to stop. Now she won't talk of it, so there's no need asking her.
I've never heard a word about that.
I'm not surprised. Perhaps I shouldn't have told you.
No, I'm pleased to know. And when these women came to you?
How could I help it? For I did see things and hear things at that time. Of course, the ladies were supposed to come just for the face treatment. But was I to blame if I kept hearing those messages for them poor souls, or seeing things they wanted me to see?
No, of course not, Gran, but had you been quite honest with Father Devitt, would he have said it was all right to pass on what you saw and heard?
No, and he said as much years later when I told him.
That's a terrible thing that you did, Cora. Whether you have the second sight or not, it was not for you to put yourself up as knowing what the good Lord was keeping from those poor women. That is seeking to exercise a forbidden power over others. God's ways are not our ways, Cora. We may see needless suffering. God, in his infinite wisdom, may see everything quite differently.
Oh, Father Devitt. Will I ever be forgiven? I've put myself on the same level as a woman like that, Mrs. Mallinger.
Mrs. Mallinger? I don't think I know anyone of that name.
The devil incarnate, Father.
Oh, surely.
She's a tout. One of the most notorious in New York. She controls 5 or 6 so-called mediums. They find vulnerable people and fasten on them. It's not difficult to find out information about lost relatives. I know cases where she sucked people dry, selling them news they wanted to hear. It's just the same as peddling drugs.
No, no, calm yourself, Cora. Your case is quite different from this Mrs. Mallinger. You aren't using your God-given gift to rob people, nor are you knowingly telling them lies they want to hear. But all the same, what you are doing is wrong. Cora, I'm going to ask you to swear by everything that is holy, with your hand on this Bible, that you will never commit such blasphemy again. Not ever in the whole of your life. Do you swear?
I do, Father. Indeed, I do.
Whatever may be revealed to you, you must keep to yourself. If you see things that others do not see, that is a personal gift to you from the Almighty. Do I make myself clear, Cora?
Indeed you do, Father Devitt.
But at the time, Gran...
At the time, I thought I was doing a good thing for those poor women, keeping them out of the clutches of fraudsters who were only after their money.
But Mrs. Klingsland, what happened with her?
Oh, with Mrs. Klingsland, it was a different story. From the day she saw those first wrinkles, the thought that she was old and never left her. Nor could she help herself, asking people all the time, her husband, of course, but friends, visitors, even the servants.
Tell me honestly now, don't you think I'm beginning to go off a little? I'm not what I was, am I? You can be quite honest with me. I need to know. Do say what you think.
She wore everyone out. After a bit, her friends fell away. Fewer and fewer came to the house. As for some of the newer ones who did visit, well, I didn't much care for the likes of them. But no one, the friends who clung on, the visitors who called, no one could give her what she craved. The gaze of men struck dumb by her beauty.
She could have paid for that. She had enough money.
Oh, she was much too smart to be humbugged in that way. How she used to laugh at the elderly double-chinners trotting around to the nightclubs with their boyfriends. She laughed. Yet she couldn't bear no longer having men around her, flattering, admiring, loving.
I can understand that.
Can you? Can you really, Moira? I don't believe that anyone can really know what a beautiful woman suffers when she loses her beauty. For you and me, and perhaps most women in the world, beginning to grow old is like going from a bright, warm room to one a little less bright, a little less warm. But to a beauty like Mrs. Klingsland, it's like being pushed out of a brilliant ballroom, all flowers and chandeliers, into the winter night and the snow.
Oh, Gran.
What a season, Cora. A ball every night of the week. And a different partner each time. I'd no sooner shown my face in the ballroom than the young men were clustering around, each asking for a dance. My card was always filled in seconds. Oh, and the proposals! I could have married 100 times over. Who gave a thought to the future? We were eternal, forever young, indestructibly beautiful. All of us, women and men alike. Day after day we'd glance into the looking glass and see no changes. Life itself was a dance. We were happy, carefree, young. Nothing could touch us. But we were blinded by youth. Perhaps that's as it should be. Reality is too harsh for the young to bear. And the reality, Cora, is that human beings are not immortal, that youth passes away all too soon. I have only to look in the mirror to see the truth of that. Time is inexorable. Time is cruel.
I think this was about the worst time of her life. She lost a tooth. She began to dye her hair. She went away to have her face lifted, but it wasn't a success. She came back looking different, but no better. That's when I really began to worry about her. She began to rely on me more and more, keeping me by her bedside for hours and paying me for the appointments she made me miss. And then there were the hangers-on.
Hangers-on? How do you mean, Gran?
People prowling around in the background. People I didn't like the look of. People who make a living exploiting the weaknesses of old women.
Look at this letter, Cora. Did you ever see such a thing?
Who's it from?
That's just it. I've never met him, and he's asking me to marry him.
Oh, merciful heavens.
I don't know him, but I do know about him. He's a count something or other, a foreigner, and he's in trouble in his own country.
And he has the effrontery to write and ask you to marry him.
I know what he's after, of course. These kind of men are always on the lookout for silly old women with money. Oh, Cora. How different it was in the old days. Let me tell you about one special day. I remember it like yesterday. I'd gone into a flower shop to buy some violets, and as I came in, there was a young fellow at the counter talking to the florist. He turned, and the moment he saw my face, he went so white, I thought he was going to faint. He stopped short in what he was saying. He just couldn't go on. He gestured for me to go ahead.
So I bought my violets, and as I went out, one violet dropped from the bunch. I saw him stoop and pick it up and hide it away.
Now isn't that romantic?
Oh, it's not the end. A few days later... Good heavens! Aren't you the man in the flower shop?
Indeed I am. And you bought violets?
I came away with one less than I paid for.
You don't want it back?
No. Keep it. But tell me, why haven't we met? Who are you?
My name is Harry Buchanan.
Buchanan? You're not related to Suzanne by any chance.
She's my mother.
Good heavens above! She used to look after me when I was little. Babysit, that sort of thing. My parents were always gallivanting about. Oh, I loved her very much. Then she went over to Europe, 20-odd years ago, and I haven't seen her since. I did hear she had married an Englishman. And I remember she became Suzanne Buchanan.
He's Scottish, actually, my father. Something big in the civil service. I was brought up in England. I've come over here to take up a new job. A family friend on my mother's side is giving me a start in the banking business. I'll be working in New York.
Oh, that sounds just great. Do send my love to your mother when you next write.
Of course, but I'll be seeing her before too long. I have to go back to England shortly to settle everything up. Meanwhile, I'd love to get to know New York a little better. Do you think you might be able to spare the time?
Why don't you let me show you around?
Would you?
We'll make a start tomorrow. Where are you staying?
The Waldorf Astoria.
I'll pick you up at midday.
I didn't know it then, Cora, my dear. But I suppose that was the only time I've ever been in love. Really in love.
But what about Mr. Klingsland?
Oh, yes. I love him, and he adores me, of course. But there's nothing like first love, is there, Cora?
Tell me about it.
Oh, there's so little to tell. I met Harry only 4 or 5 times. He was so handsome, so full of life, such fun. But nothing really serious passed between us before he had to travel back to England to tidy up his affairs ahead of settling in New York. He booked his return to the States on the maiden voyage of the Titanic. On the night of April 15th, 1912, he went down with the ship. He drowned, along with hundreds and hundreds of others. All that youth, all that life.
Mercy upon us. But that was 24 years ago.
The years make no difference, Cora. The way he would look at me. I know no one ever worshipped me as he did. If only he hadn't died, Cora. It's the sorrowing for him that's brought me to this pass. To grieve for someone for a quarter of a century, it's a terrible thing.
Well, a day or two after that, I got a shock. Coming out of Mrs. Klingsland's door just as I was going in, I met a woman I'd know among a million, even if I was to meet her again in hell, which is exactly where I will if I don't watch my steps. It was a woman called Mrs. Malinger, a pimp who controls a team of fake mediums across New York. And all of a sudden, pieces of a jigsaw came together. I'd heard it said that this Mrs. Malinger had fallen in with a foreign count who was costing her a fortune.
The count who'd written to Mrs. Klingsland.
Exactly. And I saw well enough what could happen. She could persuade my poor lady that the Count was mad over her beauty and get a hold of her that way. Or else, and this was worse, she could make Mrs. Klingsland talk and get at the story of the poor young man called Harry Buchanan. Then she'd start bringing messages from him, and that could go on forever and bring in even more money.
You couldn't let that happen, Gran.
I could not. I was so sorry for my Mrs. Klingsland. I could see she was sick and fading away. Her will was so much weaker than it used to be. If I was to save her from those gangsters, I'd have to do it straight away. The solemn oath I'd given to Father Devitt and my conscience would have to be sorted out later, if they could be.
What you are doing is wrong, Cora. I'm going to ask you to swear by everything that is holy, with your hand on this Bible, that you will never commit such blasphemy again. Not ever in the whole of your life. Do you swear?
I do, Father. Indeed, I do. Believe me, Moira, I never did such hard thinking as I did that night. It seemed to me I was after doing something that was against the church and against my own principles. But then I told myself, what'll happen if that woman really gets her claws into Mrs. Clingsland? She'll bleed her dry and then leave her without help or comfort. I'd seen it happen, and I wasn't about to let it happen to my lady. I spent most of the night in thought, and in the morning I was sure of what I had to do. I had to beat that Mrs. Malinger at her own game.
Not so well, Cora, since you ask. I'm still finding it hard to get a good night's sleep. I woke at about 3 a.m. and I couldn't get to sleep again.
Well, now, I find that very peculiar.
Why?
Because exactly the same thing happened to me last night.
Really?
Yes, and something very strange as well. I don't know why. Perhaps it was the way you spoke about that young man on the Titanic. But at just about 3 o'clock, I suddenly felt as though he was in the room with me.
Oh, Cora. Perhaps he was. Quick, tell me, what happened?
There was nothing to see. But out of the darkness, something came to me in my mind. I never told you I have the second sight.
Cora!
I never speak of it. All my life, I've felt things, known things that other people don't. I never use the gift. These days, it's against the church's teaching. But this happening last night, it was so clear that I just have to tell you, it was from Harry. It was a word he desperately wanted me to bring you.
What? What was it?
He wanted me to tell you that he'd always loved you, from the very moment he first set eyes on you in that flower shop.
Then why, oh why didn't he tell me so?
I'll have to try to reach him again and ask him that.
Tonight, Cora, tonight. I just know he'll come, and you must be ready for him. You must write down everything he says. I want every single word written down the moment he says it.
Well, here was the real difficulty. Writing wasn't ever my strong suit. As for finding the words a young gentleman in love who'd gone down on the Titanic might use, well, you might as well have asked me to write an engineer's manual. But it's wonderful, as Father Divot says, how Providence sometimes seems to be listening behind the door. That night, when I got home, I found a letter waiting for me from one of my patients.
My dear Mrs. Attlee, may I appeal to your generosity of heart, which I know from personal experience is overflowing with love and compassion? Some years ago, before the financial disaster, when we were very well off, we employed a young Irishman as a tutor to our 3 girls. We all grew to love him dearly, but of course when our fortune and our income were wiped out, we had to let him go. We're now living in very reduced circumstances. Now, I've just learned that Shonik is virtually down and out, but much worse, I was told that he's dying of consumption. He's living in some wretched rooming house in Montclair. I'll put the address at the foot of this letter. Mrs. Attlee, could I ask you to visit him and do whatever you can for the poor fellow? You're so good with your hands and your medications, to say nothing of the great comfort you bring to people in distress. I shall forever be grateful to you for how you supported me in the days of the Wall Street crash. I send you my best regards, Aurora Bentley.
You're not the only one with second sight, Mrs. Attlee. It runs in my family, too.
Second sight doesn't come into it at all, Shonik. This is simply to save that poor lady from falling into the hands of cheats and blackguards who rob her blind. And it will bring some comfort to the poor soul. Tell me now, are you any good at all with the writing?
We'll soon find out what 3 years in Dublin University did for me. Now, what's needed? Give me the story.
His name was Harry Buchanan. My lady, her first name is Dorothy, by the way, met him 25 years ago before the Great War. They met in a flower shop as strangers, but she was astonished to see him at a dinner shortly afterwards when she discovered he was the son of someone who'd looked after her when she was young. They spent only a short time together before he had to go back to England. Although nothing was said, she is as certain as she can be that he adored her. He booked her return to the States on the maiden voyage of the Titanic. Harry died in the disaster.
Yes. Yes. Harry.
If I don't jump in first, my Mrs. Clingsland will be at the mercy of a particularly ruthless fake medium. She is so vulnerable. All I could tell her was that Harry came to me last night to say he had always loved her. You should see the effect it had on her. But she immediately asked why he'd never told her. And so I was forced to say I would ask him. That's when she demanded I write down every word he uttered. It's beyond me, Shonik.
Write this down, Mrs. Attlee. My dearest Dorothy, you ask me why I didn't declare my love for you. In the florist, I was so struck by your beauty, I could scarcely speak.
A little slower. Could scarcely speak. Yes?
But when I saw you next at that dinner, so elegant in that gown, I felt further away from you than ever. Got that?
Further away from you than ever.
I walked the streets all night. Then I went home and wrote you a letter. But in the end, I didn't dare send it.
Yes, yes. Oh, that's really very good. Didn't dare send it.
And like this. We had so little time together. I could never get up the courage to speak. But I loved you then, and I love you still. Harry.
I bet that went down well, Gran.
It certainly did. Mrs. Clingsland swallowed it like champagne, blinded by her beauty, struck dumb by the love of her. Exactly what she'd been thirsting and hungering for all those years.
I can guess what followed. She wanted more of the same.
Of course. How fortunate it was that I had young Shonik to help me. He was dying from consumption, fading away before my eyes. Yet I had only to sit down beside him with my pencil and notebook to the ready, and he would seem to retreat into another world, and the words would flow. In the end, I believe he actually felt the emotion he was dictating to me. He began to look forward to my visits. He would fret for me on the days I didn't come. But my, what questions she asked!
Tell him, if it's true that I took his breath away that first evening at dinner to describe to you how I was dressed. They must remember things like that, even in the other world, don't you think, Cora?
My, that must have been a poser, Gran.
Actually not. She described that dress to me so often that I was easily able to tell Shonik every detail. And so it went on, and every time, one way or another, I managed to find an answer that satisfied her. Until one day.
Oh, why did he never say things like that when we were together?
That floored me. Going back that night to Shonik's wretched room, I just couldn't imagine why he hadn't. But when I told Shonik what she'd asked, he went dreamy for a bit.
An evil influence was at work. Yes, someone was jealous and did all they could to come between us. Somehow, I was prevented from saying what was in my heart. Here, Mrs. Attlee, give me your notebook. I'll write it out myself.
I knew it. I always knew it. Oh, Cora, tell me again how he said I looked the first day he saw me.
Why, you must have looked just as you look now, for there's 20 years fallen from your face.
But Gran, how long did this go on? Surely Shonik isn't still helping you.
Shonik, my darling, is dead. He died quite a while back.
But Mrs. Clingsland, didn't she come to rely on those messages? What happened to her?
Mrs. Clingsland is happy and contented.
Really?
She has been ever since Shonik passed away. Shall I tell you how it all happened?
Please, Gran.
You see, I didn't visit Mrs. Clingsland every day. And even on the days I called, I spent only a few hours with her. I couldn't stop her seeking help and comfort from other people. And she did, of course. But she quickly saw through them.
Cora, I can't get on without the messages you bring me. The ones I get through other people don't sound like Harry. Yours do.
Mrs. Clingsland, I've been going against my church and risking my immortal soul to get those messages through to you. If you found others that can help you, so much the better for me, and I'll go and make my peace with heaven this very evening.
But the other messages don't help me, Cora. I don't want to disbelieve you. Only lying awake all night and turning things over, I get so miserable. I shall die if you can't prove to me that it's really Harry speaking to you.
But it wasn't, of course. The messages came from Shonik. I really was the medium.
Granny, you don't mean... Do you think that Shonik...
Let me go on. I went over to Mrs. Clingsland and took her two hands in mine. How can I prove it to you? It's not possible.
There's only one way.
And what's that?
You must ask him to repeat to you that letter he wrote and didn't dare send to me. I'll know instantly then if you were in communication with him. And if you are, I'll never doubt you again.
Ah, that's difficult to be sure, Mrs. Attlee. I couldn't produce that all at once. You must give me some time to think it over, to get into the spirit of the thing.
You'll do your best, I know. The poor lady has come to depend on you so much. Well, on me, I suppose, for she doesn't know you exist. Yet nothing has satisfied her. She's kept asking for more and more. But this letter, if you can give it to her, I truly believe this will bring her peace of mind.
I understand that, Mrs. Attlee. I'll need some time on my own. Come and see me tomorrow.
I went back to his room the next evening. You can understand this, Moira McCushla. But as I climbed the stairs, I felt one of those sudden warnings, the kind that takes you by the throat.
Oh, Gran.
I could tell that something terrible was waiting for me. I pushed open the door and went in. He lay there in his bed, his eyes open, but he couldn't see me. I took hold of his hand, and it was icy cold. I held the cracked looking glass to his lips, and I knew he'd gone to his maker. I closed his eyes and fell on my knees beside the bed. You shan't go without a prayer, you poor fellow. When I stood up, I knew I'd have to call the people in the house. But before doing so, I took a quick look around. I didn't want any of those bits he'd written down for me to be left lying about. Luckily, I found no pieces of writing, and in the shock of finding him dead like that, I'd completely forgotten about the letter. But as I turned for a last look at him, there on the floor, half under the bed, was a sheet of paper scribbled all over in pencil in his weak writing. I picked it up, and holy mother, it was the letter from Harry to his darling Dorothy.
But you had to copy it out.
And what a work it was. I was so intent on getting each word right that I hardly noticed what was in it. If I thought about it at all, it was only to wonder if it wasn't worded too plain-like. I missed some of the long words that Shonik had used in his previous messages. Anyway, all this took some time. And what with the arranging for the poor fellow's funeral, it was a few days before I went back to Mrs. Clingsland.
Well, Cora, well, the letter. Have you brought me the letter?
I pulled it out of my bag and handed it to her, and then I sat down and waited, my heart in my boots. I waited a long time.
Oh no, Harry. You silly fellow. Oh, how foolish. No need. Oh, if only. Oh, Cora. Cora.
Well?
Oh, Cora, now at last he's spoken to me, really spoken.
And now, my dear, you'll believe in me, I hope, won't you?
I was mad ever to doubt you, Cora. But how on earth did you manage to get this, you darling, you?
It's not an easy thing, my dear, to coax a letter like that from the dead.
From the dead. Wasn't that the truth, though, Gran? What I want to know is, which death did it come from, Shonik or Harry?
Moira!
Well, had the thought never crossed your mind? Oh, this might have all started as a trick, the two of you just as false as those fake mediums you hate so much. But Shonik, he was as Irish as you or me, and he did tell you he had the second sight. did Harry Buchanan speak through him from time to time? And even if all the previous messages were invented by Shonik, didn't you say the final letter was somehow different, simpler? Was that the real Harry speaking? Did he come to Shonik sometime during his last night on Earth and use him to write that message?
But this is most generous, Mrs. Attlee. How can I ever thank you?
As I explained, Father Divitt, it doesn't come from me. This is an anonymous gift from a lady I know and work with. She wants part of her donation to pay for Shonik O'Flaherty's funeral and for masses to be said for his soul.
The poor young fellow. She knew him well?
She didn't know him at all. I was the one who knew him, and her kind, generous heart was touched when I told her how he had died.
Well, the church is most grateful. And of course, this pays for masses for some years ahead. Although she wants to remain anonymous, will you pass on our thanks for her generosity?
So Father Divitt was sort of an accomplice to the deception, though he never knew.
Well, the church benefited a little, I suppose.
And did you ever clear your conscience with Father Divitt? That solemn oath you took before him with your hand on the holy book?
Well, I thought about it a great deal, as you can imagine, and in the end I realized that I hadn't broken my oath at all. Oh, I may have done a little wrong, though with the best of motives, but my oath? Oh no, I'd stay true to that.
Well, how do you make that out at all?
What I swore solemnly to Father Divitt was that I'd never again use my second sight to pass on information to other people, to foretell the future, or bring messages from beyond the grave. And nor did I. I kept my oath to Father Divitt. It wasn't my second sight I was using to help poor Mrs. Clingsland. It was play-acting as far as I was concerned. Pure theatre. Second sight never came into it.
Not your second sight, perhaps. But that final letter from Shonik, what of that?
Ah, that Makushla is something we'll never know.
This was Looking Glass by Edith Wharton, adapted by Neville Teller. Our cast included Anna Olson as Mrs. Attlee, Jim Ramlett as Father Divitt, Jackie Bischoff as Moira, Linda Nelson as Mrs. Clingsland, Luke Langfeld as Harry, Bailey Wolfe as Mrs. Bentley, and Wesley Erickson as Shonik. The Looking Glass was directed by Bailey Wolfe with audio engineering by Keith Aberson. The show was produced by Locally Grown Theater in 2020.